Hello, Fightful Faithful, and welcome to a very special episode of Sour Graps. I'm old. Back in the 80s, sitcoms and stuff, family shows would have very special episodes, usually dealing with like something going on in the news or a very important, a hard to deal with subject, you know, like you could watch as a family, your parents and you would sit down and watch, and then maybe the TV show could tell you about, talk to you about death in a way that your parents didn't feel comfortable, you know what I mean? Or drug abuse, the war or whatever's going on, you know, a very special episode about blank. This is a very special episode of Sour Graps because we are going to talk about death. We're going to talk about the death of WWE slowly, agonizingly, dying in the back room at the Performance Center. I don't know that it can recover from this. I mean, it may take a while. It may be one of those like really slow cancers. Inoperable. All the tumors are inoperable. You can't do anything about it. Chemo's not going to work. It's just a waiting game, you know? It may take weeks, may take years. But you're going to die from this, WWE. Raw Underground is what killed you. I'm so sorry to have to be the one to break this to you. I'm your host, Alex Pulowski, and everything sucks. I just realized that the official drink of Sour Graps isn't a Sprecher root beer. I've used those on occasionally, but I realized that for something to be the official drink of Sour Graps, well, the drink has to be sour. So before I get started talking about the demise of WWE and also, you know, Raw, I'm going to chug what's left of this jug of lemonade. Lemonade, the official drink of Sour Graps. Here we go. Ooh, that's sour. Ugh. So sour. I got the sour power. That's the slogan for the official drink of Sour Graps. I got the sour power. You need to clap too. I got the sour power. Let's get started. Boy, oh boy. So, it came out yesterday that some shit was going down at the taping for Raw. Shane O'Mac was back. Oh, and Jesus. If there's ever something that's going to induce palpitations in me, it's the phrase, Shane O'Mac is back. I mean, he was the worst thing in WWE while he was there. This most recent run was so bad. Like forcing people to announce him as the best in the world because he beat Dolph Ziggler one time. Like, Jesus. He had a feud where The Miz turned babyface. In the feud, the feud was about how Shane McMahon beat up The Miz's dad. They had a match at WrestleMania to cement the Miz babyface turn, which was really working up until that point. And Shane won the match at WrestleMania last year, which still doesn't make sense. It makes more sense than having Charlotte win the WrestleMania match over Rhea Ripley this year, but not by much. And they continued to push like he was feuding with Roman Reigns for the longest time, and with Kevin Owens for even longer. And it, oh God, it was so much time was spent on Shane McMahon that there was no time for anything good. It was just all the bad things because of Shane O'Mac. So he's back. And we were wondering, okay, well, what's he going to do? Also, Rusev, I think, put it best. Vince said last week, we need to build new stars. So Rusev quoted that and then said, they brought Shane back. Perfect. It is. It's perfect. Mwah. Chef's kiss. We need to build new stars. Let's bring back Shane, the boss's son, who's 50. We need to build new stars. Speaking of that, I'm going to get this out of the way now so I don't forget about it. And also, I want to get angry at the beginning, and maybe that'll carry me through the rest of the night. They brought Mustafa Ali back 2 weeks ago. They had him come back to back up Ricochet and Cedric in a little six-man versus the Hurt Business. And he got the pinfall on MVP, who at that point was parading around himself around as the actual U.S. champion. And then the week after that, he had a singles match versus Bobby Lashley. But it was effectively a squash. It was a long squash, but it was a squash nonetheless. And he could have won it. They could have easily said, we're going to pull the trigger on you. You're going to be beaten up for the entire match, but somehow squeak out a roll-up victory or something. You know, the storyline will continue between you and Bobby Lashley in perpetuity. Eventually, you might be in line for a U.S. title shot. That was last week. This week is on fucking Main Event. 2 weeks. This guy, who is a, I swear to Christ, is a can't-miss babyface global megastar waiting to happen. You held him off TV for 7 months, brought him back. 2 weeks later, he's on fucking Main Event. Maybe if you're looking to build new stars, maybe don't do Shane's shitty vanity MMA project and instead build a new fucking star. So, yeah. Now, also, we were told that WWE has learned that a new faction is going to debut. What will they be? Who will they be? Who will be involved in this faction? We don't know. All we know is that a faction will be debuting this evening. Tune in to find out. Spoiler alert. A faction didn't debut. A faction was teased, but no faction debuted. Chef's kiss, WWE. Let's debut a new faction ostensibly made up of new guys. You know, some new stars we could build. And then, well, there wasn't time to debut them because we had to do Shane O'Mac's shitty vanity MMA project. Let's get to the actual show last night, now that I'm 10 minutes into the episode. So we start off with the U.S. title match, MVP versus Apollo Crews, that was supposed to happen at Extreme Rules, but didn't happen at Extreme Rules because Apollo Crews was absent. We don't know why, but he seems to be fine now, so that's good. That's good. That's the best case scenario. I want him to be fine. He appears to be fine, and that's good. Now, Apollo Crews comes out, and the lights go out. The lights brown out, like they go down and then back up, and then they flicker a little bit. And Tom Phillips, we are aware of some bad weather in the area. Good. Great. Okay. This will be important later. The lights flickering and whatnot. Okay. So there's slightly important is that each man is carrying a title belt. You know, like each the MVP is holding his new one, and Apollo Crews has the old one that we've seen for years. Match is fine. Match is okay. Lashley gets involved. Shelton Benjamin gets involved. Apollo Crews wins with his toss powerbomb. Hooray! Apollo Crews gets to stay United States champ. I mean, I think they're really like, MVP is really good at like rolling with the punches and making you feel like he's bigger than the U.S. title anyway. So it doesn't matter if he like I didn't even want that title. I mean, he says he wants a rematch, so yes, he does want the title. But just the way he carries himself throughout the rest of the night is like I didn't even lose. Because during the match, the lights went off and on, and so he's blaming that. He's saying, you know, this is an unsafe working environment. I deserve a rematch because the only reason I lost is because of that. So, you know, there you go. So he wants a rematch at SummerSlam later on. Apollo Crews, you know, accepts. But backstage, he's interviewed by Charlie Caruso, and he says that it feels really good to be back, to be champion, to be the true champion, the undisputed United States champion. He's got both belts now, and he says he's going to use the new one that MVP paid for, because in kayfabe, apparently, MVP paid for a brand new belt to get made. But he's gonna give the old one to his kid. All right, cute. You know, okay. We'll see where this goes. I'm glad that he gets to stay being pushed. There was the rumors going around that like, well, now that Paul Heyman, because that's how long he's been being pushed out of nowhere, really. Like from absolute obscurity to a great match with Aleister Black. Back in the empty arena, but no PC kids in the audience days, had a great match out of nowhere with Aleister Black, still lost, but then like had a program, won the title from Andrade. Like it's been a long time. This push has been going on, but since he's been kind of out and gone, the whole thing with Paul Heyman being removed from power happened. And all of that has been like people were like, oh, well, maybe Apollo Crews isn't long for this push since he was a Paul Heyman guy. I'm glad that's not the case. They still have a lot more they can do with him, I do believe. So in that case, good for you, Apollo Crews, is what I will say. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anything here. I'm looking at my notes. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, after the match, Lashley tries to hit the full Cruz on full Cruz. Ha! Ah! Full Nelson on Cruz, but Cruz runs away. Yeah, so this is where they start doing the thing. Remember the giant black guy who was a ninja for comedy effect? You know, back when they debuted the ninjas, there was one dude who was a giant black ninja. Not wearing black, because ninjas wear black, but like a black guy wearing black who was giant. Well, now he doesn't, he's not a ninja anymore. Now he works for Shane McMahon, and he's standing, he's a bouncer at Shane's private club, I guess. That's all we know at this point. This is, we've been told it's the brainchild of Shane McMahon. Oh, good. We'll find out more later, is what they say. So Blonde Not Charlie is talking to Sasha and Bailey. They're doing weird like, why are you asking us questions shtick? Like, what are you, a reporter? Why are you asking us questions? You're a bad reporter. Journalism is bad. Fake news. There's an undercurrent of that all through last night from the heels. And I get it. They're heels, but it's weird that it was like a through line. They have a video package about how dominant and amazing they are. And hey, you know what? They have been. They're using this huge push they've been getting to do amazing work, and good for them. Good for them. I still think you have opportunity to build some new stars while Charlotte and Becky are out, instead of just concentrating all of the titles onto two already established stars. But then Asuka is, you know, we cut to Asuka somewhere else backstage at the end of this thing. She's ranting and screaming. She says, revenge will be very, very sweet after what happened to Kairi Sane last week. Banks and Bailey are very upset that Asuka interrupted their video with the video of Asuka. Shayna Baszler shows up. And she's upset that Sasha Banks, who's still ostensibly a SmackDown superstar, came to Raw, where Shayna lives, and says, I want a shot at Asuka's title, and snaked her way into the title shot. So Shayna doesn't like that, so she punches Sasha right in the jaw. And so now we're going to get Sasha versus Shayna, maybe? Except for Asuka wants a title shot again? So, I don't know. We'll find out later, obviously. I mean, I know, but at this point, we don't know. The Iconics approach Kevin Owens, and they've heard that Kevin Owens is having the KO show. So, they would like very much to be on the KO show. And he says, sorry, I already got a couple of guests. I already got a guest. He goes into the ring, and he says, Shane's back, and I have some thoughts on that, but I'm not going to give them to you right now. And I do like that that Kevin is being consistent. Like, Kevin knows that somebody like me would be like, hey, Kevin, my first question, if I had a chance to ask Kevin Owens a question, if I was backstage saying, hey, Kevin, you have a very, very, let's just call it eventful history with you and Shane McMahon. What are your thoughts about him being back? So I love that he addressed the question I didn't get to answer, ask him, because I don't work there, and thank God for them that I don't. But I like that he answered that ahead of time. got it out of the way. He said, "Yeah, I got some thoughts on that. Maybe I'll get to him later," and that's fine. I just like that he's thinking about it. That's good. But he brings out Ruby Riott, and Ruby Riott at one point she says that, you know, it's been hard. Last week was my first singles win since February, and I wanted her to say at the end of that, of 2019, because that's the case. She hasn't had her first singles victory since February. She had her first singles victory since February of 2019. So a year and 5 months. Not just 5 months. When they have her say, it's my first singles victory since February, they're saying 5 months. They're not saying the rest of it. They need to. Anyway, she was talking about the only thing that, yes. So again, remember how I said that they only brought Bianca Belair back onto TV because Liv was absent, and they had to do a thing with Riott and the Iconics. So if Liv wasn't there, they had decided to use Bianca Belair for some reason, and then they didn't use her again for the next 2 weeks. But if had Liv been there, then she would have been used, and Bianca Belair would still be off TV. So they're going through with this whole Liv thing, and Ruby Riott doesn't mention Bianca Belair at all, who got her the victory in the tag match versus the Iconics, backed her up when nobody else would, and said, talk about how much she said Ruby Riott is my girl, and I'm going to be there for her, and also talked her up and talked some trash to Peyton Royce before Ruby Riott's singles victory. And in this little interview, I did not appreciate how Ruby Riott never mentioned thank you to Bianca Belair for helping me out when nobody else would, because it looks like Ruby Riott is a really bad friend. And they're going to spend the rest of this segment saying that she's a good friend and she's changed and she's going to be better, but her oversight of Bianca Belair doesn't look good in that way. So, when she brings up Liv Morgan, because she says it would have been really great if Liv Morgan had been there to share it with me, Owens is like, hey, cool, cool thing, because she's coming out. I brought her out. Here she goes. So Liv comes out, and she says, you're going to, what, you want, I'll hear you out, because Kevin Owens convinced me to come out here. By the way, all those brownouts, the lights flickering and mics being bad, that's just happening all the time. Because Cohen Evans is like, hey, this mic doesn't work, whatever. Weird things are going on at the Performance Center. I'm sure it's just the weather. It must be just the weather. They say bad weather is in the area. It must be just the weather. It's not the weather. Ruby has a really good explanation. Psychologically, it makes sense for her character. She came back from so long, and she realized that she wanted everything to be the same. But it wasn't the same. Because Sarah was basically gone by the time Ruby got back. And Liv didn't need her anymore. And it didn't feel good to be back, to be an afterthought, and to not have her friends, people who she thought was her friends, to be needed. So she lashed out and took all that out on Liv. And it felt like shit. And so she says, I forgive me, and you know, I want to, you know, I think it's awesome that you came into your own and all that kind of stuff. apparently she and Liv and Sarah all got the same tattoo, which is the date of their debut as the Riott Squad. And she asked for Liv for one more chance to make the Riot Squad as strong as they possibly can be. But wouldn't you know it, those darn Iconics, they came out. And their mics don't work often, very often. One thing I do love is that Peyton Royce says that Liv should have stayed in the bathtub. Remember those terrible vignettes where she was in a bathtub because she was, I'm a changed girl now. I'm different. I'm the real me. I'm in a bathtub. Look at me. I'm soaking in it. It was awful. They were awful. And everyone who was involved in producing them should be ashamed of themselves. But I do love that occasionally when something is so bad, a few months later, they'll have somebody else reference it and how bad it was. You should have stayed in the bathtub is a perfect insult. They're keeping, if you want to see a picture of BFFs in the dictionary, it's us, the Iconics. And Liv's like, yeah, you're right. We're not BFFs like you guys, but nobody knows how to start a riot better than us. And I was like, when I rethought about this later, because of the other thing that we're going to talk about later, because there's somebody else who seems to be a new faction who might be somebody who wants to start riots. I don't know. Anyway. So, after that little quip by Liv, Owens is like, you guys should just go. And instead, the Iconics like take turns slapping Kevin Owens in the face. And he's like, I can't. Because he says, is there any way you guys could get more technical difficulties, but like just on their mics? And so they slap Kevin Owens, and he's like, well, I guess I can't do anything about it because I'm a gentleman. And so he asks Liv and Ruby to go after them, and they do. And so back from the break, big old security guard, bouncer dude, still waiting outside of Shane's room. Iconic versus the Riot Squad is over quickly. Liv gets the pinfall. Ruby's in peril for most of it. They're going to do a one of their weird, like, inverted magic killer things on Liv, but Ruby saves Liv, and they both do a double team, like, standing STO to Billy Kay, and there you go. So the Riot Squad is back together-ish? Cool. I mean, it's really weird. Like, all they have... Man, it seems like somebody had an idea for what they really wanted to do with Liv Morgan. Part of it involved her being Lana's ex-lover. But that was quickly forgotten about. Not by me. I'll never forget about that little choice they made. But... they had something planned, and until that went over like a fart in church, until that thing went belly up, they had something planned for that, and we'll never know because COVID and whatnot. But I feel like they had something big planned for Liv, and this wasn't it. Just sticking her back with Ruby Riot. Okay, cool. Although, Ruby Riot and Liv Morgan could easily be future women's tag champs when we get out of the era of Bayley and Sasha hold all the belts. So, back from the commercial. Tom sends us back to Charlie Caruso, who is reporting that there was an accident of some kind backstage where like a box fell over. Nobody was around, thankfully, so nobody got injured, but people were around. And they say to Charlie Caruso that this box falling over was no accident. Somebody pushed over this box. Because that box had it coming. I don't know what. Somebody pushed over a box and it merited a backstage investigation by a reporter on the spot, Shirley Caruso, who's so observant, she doesn't seem to realize that the man she's trying to sleep with got married like 10 days ago. Crack reporter on the case, Charlie Caruso, telling us all about her box that fell over, that thankfully didn't injure anyone because nobody was around, but also witnesses who were around tell her that box falling over was no accident. Film at 11. Jesus, this fucking company. It had the box falling over had to do with the lights glitching. Did the box falling over, like, did the box topple over against a light switch? Did it dislodge a cord from a power strip when it toppled over? Unaccidentally. We may never know. It was a stupid thing they did, and they thought we wouldn't notice how stupid it was. But we did. We did notice. Yeah. MVP's really pissed off still about his unsafe working conditions, and he says, that's the story. This is the story. And Charlie Caruso says, hey, by the way, Apollo Crews, you know, he accepted your challenge. But then Shelton shows up and says, hey, somebody has stolen my 24/7 title. And you were like, hey, maybe that has something to do with all the people who are just, you know, turning on lights on and off and fiddling with the microphone stuff. Maybe that's part of that story. No, it's not. It's not that at all. It's something stupid. Something that has no bearing on anything else, but it's just a thing they did. Hey, here's the best thing about the entire episode of Raw is this thing that's about to happen. And it doesn't involve wrestling. Fantastic. So Drew McIntyre, he says, let's have this match, Randy. Like, he's talking to the camera. And, you know, he does all the same shtick about how Randy got everything handed to him. But we have something in common. Like, when we were younger, Vince McMahon looked at us each separately, obviously, and said, you're the chosen one. You're the person who's going to take this into the future. I got fired, and you got second chance after second chance after second chance. I remember guys having to clean up your crap, your legit crap, because poop was put in gear bags by Randy Orton, and nothing ever happened to him because not nepotism, because not favoritism. I don't know. Definitely wasn't those things, though. So then Orton comes out, and he says, you know, yes, you're right. I should have been fired multiple times. By the way, Ric Flair standing there for no fucking reason. Like, Ric Flair, Jesus Christ, just go home. Like, and I hope home is not in Florida, because goddamn, that fucking state, they have more cases than the entire European Union. Could we find a PC, a performance center that's centralized somewhere where they perform that's not in Florida? Jesus Christ. Go home, Rick. You don't need to be there for this shit. William Regal is making matches via Skype on NXT. Go home, Rick. So I really love this part where Orton says, like, listen, I dare you to come up with one thing, one gripe about Randy Orton that's original, that hasn't been said by everybody else. Yes, you have the same everybody sells the same shit about me. I get it. It's getting old, though. Because then I have a match with those people and I shut them up for good. So what now? And Drew says, the thing that's about you is you're a terrible leader, basically. You have the opportunity to lead like The Undertaker led, to take younger guys under your wing, impart some knowledge about how this business works, about how WWE works, about this or that. Just tell them some stories. Give them some wisdom. Orton doesn't do that. Orton could care less. So he says specifically, I remember 10 years ago when I was sitting in catering and my life and my career was spiraling, and you walking past me in catering without even looking at me, and how much it would have meant to a young superstar, a young wrestler, to have Randy Orton say a kind word to him. You knew that I was in a deep depression. I was thousands of miles from home. My mother was sick. And any word, any kind word from somebody like Randy Orton would have meant the world to me. And you did nothing. Specifically, that's a specific thing that he has. But also, I see you doing nothing for anybody else here. But you won't do that. So at SummerSlam, I'm gonna kick your head off, and I'm gonna do it not just for me, but for all those people that you overlooked and didn't give a shit about your entire career. I thought that Drew's promo was fantastic. I thought Randy really gave him the right cues to set him up for it. It was all really perfectly done. I do love it. Thank you. And I promise you, you'll see it coming when I kick your head off. Which brings us to this thing. SummerSlam is now, you'll never see it coming. Like that's the tagline for SummerSlam this year is you'll never see it coming, which is a weird thing when there's like a date and a time set for it. Like I'm pretty sure I'll see it coming. It's like, I don't know, August. I want to actually make sure I say this correct. It's August 23rd, right? August 23rd, Sunday, August 23rd, I believe the main card kicks off at 7 p.m. Eastern. I can see it coming from here. Are you specifically referring to the RKO? Because if you are, aren't you therefore telling us there's going to be an RKO and we'll be able to see it coming because we know what's happening, so we'll be able to watch out for it. I'm watching. I got my eyes peeled. I'm not going to take my eyes off. Oh, there it was. I saw it coming. It's a stupid thing to say you'll never see it coming about an event or a thing that you're telling us by saying you'll never see it coming. You're telling us it's coming. So we can see it coming. You're so bad at this. Please, for the love of God, hire somebody to tell Vince no. And then when he kicks that person literally in the butt out of the building, hire somebody else to do it. It's going to have a terrible turnover rate, but that position needs to be filled. There needs to be people telling Vince no. On a daily basis, give him a nice padded suit to wear and a megaphone to tell Vince no. Some of his ideas are really bad. One of the ideas is to listen to his son. Oh, God. So, so here's what happens next. we're building towards something that involves Sasha and Asuka and Shayna. And because of that, there's no room for Nia Jax. So we have to get Nia Jax off of TV for a while. So she assaulted Pat Buck, WWE official Pat Buck, last week. And they show the whole deal because they're running short on time. So they're just showing you highlights of everything that happened last week. She's cutting a promo on him and he's standing in the ring. We can't see because the camera's in tight on Nia, but she's cutting a promo on him and he's standing right there. She's saying that I'm not going to attention. I'm not going to apologize for beating up a scrawny little runt who couldn't cut the mustard in his own career. Cut the mustard. If you're going to have a 74-year-old madman write the scripts, at least run them through Google Translate from 74-year-old to whatever the hell age Nia Jax is. Because I guarantee you the phrase cut the mustard is not a thing that is normally said by one Nia Jax when she could mean couldn't get it done. Couldn't get it done is a colloquialism that is far more recent in use than cut the mustard. This is what happens when you have an old man write all the scripts for all the characters. They say shit like couldn't cut the mustard. Anyway, yeah, she says, I know you want an apology from me for what I did last week. I'm not going to apologize to you. How about we have a match? You versus me. She doesn't say that. She doesn't say that. She doesn't say you versus me. She says you versus me. You versus me. You versus me right now. You versus me. That's not the word. The word you're looking for is versus. Versus, not verse. Pet peeve of mine. Sorry. Anyway, I says, I know you're a little guy, but do you have any self-respect? You can beat up a girl, right? Let's have a fight. You mean verse right? You're versus me right now. You versus me. 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 And Pat Buck says, you know, no. If you're not going to apologize out here right now, let's go talk about it in the back. This is like, I thought you'd have more fire in you. You being a ginger, your fiery red hair. Again, that's a thing that fucking Vince wrote for sure. If you want to talk to me in private, whatever you have to say to me, you can say to my face right here, right now. So she shoves the mic at him and he says, okay, great. You're suspended. If you're not going to apologize, you're suspended indefinitely without pay. So she beats him up again. She like pulls his jacket down over his shoulders and headbutts him. And he's bleeding all over his shirt. Poor Pat Buck. Anyway, I skipped over something because backstage, Ric Flair is trying to help out Kevin Owens by telling him to not be a nice guy anymore. And he's like, you know, I sacrifice friendships. Because he says this earlier too. He's like, I know a little bit about being a really bad friend, and I have a lot of regrets about that. So I like that they're actually, again, Kevin Owens making sure he's putting continuity and stuff. I want to be that leader in the locker room. I want to help out the younger people who are coming up. I want to be what Randy Orton could be, but chooses not to. And the most important thing is that he says, and that's fine. Randy doesn't have to be that. That's Randy's choice. I'm choosing to be that. And Flair takes it as some kind of huge personal insult. maybe that Owens could get a title shot like Randy Orton if Owens would listen to Flair, like apparently Flair thinks Orton is listening to him. But you know what? Owens says, you go ahead and you get Randy Orton, your buddy Randy Orton, to meet me in the ring next week, and let's find out what's going on. That's kind of cool. We can see Randy Orton beat the hell out of nice guy Kevin Owens. Maybe Kevin Owens is going to get punted. That'll be fun. I mean, it won't. It's going to be terrible because Owens is so good at it, at everything, and I'll miss him if he gets punted off the air. But it'll be really great when he comes back and beats the ever-loving piss out of Randy Orton. That'll be also a lot of fun. Hey, it's weird. The 24/7 title is only a 24/7 title when R-Truth holds it, not when Shelton Benjamin holds it. So we're actually going to have a triple threat match under triple threat rules where nobody else is allowed to actually try and get the title, which seems to be the opposite of how that goes. But who am I to judge? Remember how I said that it didn't matter, the whole, like, somebody stole my title, says Shelton Benjamin? Maybe it was the people who were messing around with stuff, with the lights and everything. Nope, it wasn't that. It was just R-Truth. That's all it was. It's R-Truth. Sneaky little R-Truth getting in the locker room, stealing something that doesn't belong to him. And the whole point of that was nothing. Because he just runs out to the ring and Tozawa and the ninjas follow him. And then Shelton Benjamin follows him. And then they go to commercial and they come back and they have a match. And while Shelton Benjamin and MVP, because MVP is out there and Bobby Lashley is out there too. Shelton Benjamin at one point does a powerbomb to Akira Tozawa that I thought was going to send him through the center of the earth. It was a hell of a powerbomb. Shelton Benjamin is really underrated and I'm glad he's actually getting some screen time and doing some stuff. Anyway, Bobby Lashley and MVP get pissed off at the ninjas. And they beat up the ninjas, and Shelton helps. And he gets distracted, so Akira Tozawa hits a diving senton off the top rope and pins R-Truth and becomes the champion, and then he runs away. So the narrative is that it's been a really rough night for the Hurt Business, for MVP and for Shelton and for Bobby. This is where we get our first glimpse at hell. Anybody ever seen that movie Event Horizon? It's an old movie from like 1996. Again, I'm old. It's a movie about a spaceship that could open a wormhole and travel through it, and then travel back. So, like, this is basically this in far, far, far into the future. This spaceship is basically testing the boundaries of time and travel, because it has something on board itself which can create a wormhole that it can then travel through and back. And the only thing is, the wormhole is, spoiler alert, it goes to hell. Like, that's where the wormhole goes. And then the spaceship comes back, and then, like, when it's back from hell, we don't know it's from hell. We find that out later. They set up a whole crew, including the guy who designed the ship. They set up a whole crew of, like, you know, space types to go figure out what the hell is. There's a distress signal. Like, we got to go figure out what the hell is going on. So they get on the ship, and everybody's dead, like, dismembered and horrible things, and they try and, like, reconstitute the ship's log because it's all data corrupted, and they finally do, and it's the ship's captain who has pulled out his own eyes, which is, like, totally, like, if you want to get yourself disqualified in an eye versus eye match, that's what you do, man. Pull out your own eye, and then you cost yourself the match. But he pulled out both of his eyes, and he's, like, holding them up toward the camera, and he says in Latin, because, you know, in the future, all ships' captains speak Latin. He says, liberate tute me, ex infernis, which means save yourself from hell. For the entire movie, they thought he was saying, liberate me, ex infernis, save me from hell. But he was actually saying, because part of the data corruption was saying, liberate tute me, save yourself from hell. This is all a long and rambling way for me to say, save yourself from hell. If you have not watched Raw Underground yet, liberate tute me, ex infernis, because I'm pretty sure if there is a hell, it looks like Shane McMahon's brainchild. It is a dank and dimly lit back room at the warehouse that is the performance center. There is a ring without ring posts and without ring ropes. There's a bunch of people pounding on the ring, dancing, like, you know, I don't know. Are they taking bets? I don't know. It looks like a place where bets are taken. Isaiah Swerve Scott, Isaiah Swerve Scott from NXT is hanging out there for some reason. He's the only one I could recognize at the time, but it's definitely Swerve Scott. Shane O'Mac comes around the side of the ring. He's got a microphone. He's like, "Hey, everybody, it's called Raw Underground. Bringing something new to Raw. Raw Underground. Come back at 10 p.m. This is important. Come back at 10 p.m. for Raw Underground." And then the camera pans up, and I shit you not, there are three sexy dancing go-go girls bathed in neon light for some reason. Raw Underground. You know, it wasn't enough. You could have that weird, like, dimly lit underground fight feel. You had to have the sexy dancing girls. Liberate tute me ex infernis. Anyway, that's coming up at 10 p.m. Be there at 10 p.m. Not a moment later. Blonde, not Charlie, is interviewing Dominic Mysterio. He's very upset about the whole thing with Seth Rollins. You know, he says, I saw my dad get blinded right in front of me. So yeah, maybe I'm not in my right mind right now. You think I've been crazy before? Here we go. I'm challenging Seth Rollins to a match at SummerSlam. And here's me thinking they were going to build to that. Like, in the future, maybe by Survivor Series or whatever, we'll have Team Dominic versus Team Seth. But in the future, while we get this kid some more reps, eventually we're going to build to a one-on-one Dominic versus Seth match. And they're like, nah, let's just fucking get that shit out of the way right now. Come on, just none of this is believable. Let's just fucking do it. So great. Okay, hey. Another good thing until the end. Sasha Banks versus Shayna Baszler it's a non-title match. Baszler and Sasha Banks are really great together. Who knew these two consummate professionals would be so fantastic together? But they are. They do great work, and good for them. There's counters to counters, and Samoa Joe has a really great thing. She says that Sasha Banks is a counter wrestler. You do something to her, she has a response to it. The thing about that is that Shayna, you can counter her once, maybe twice, maybe three times. She's just going to keep coming at you. Eventually, you're going to miss a counter, and that's it. You're done. Which is a really great analysis, because that's what she does. And this was a really great match. So Bailey's at ringside, and Asuka runs down and attacks Bailey. Nothing has happened in the ring between the two competitors. Asuka doesn't attack Shayna. She doesn't attack Sasha. She just attacks Bailey. And the referee calls for the bell, which does not make any fucking sense. So it fits right in with the new Raw. Seriously, though, you can't call for the bell when somebody runs in and attacks somebody who's not in the match. That you could call for the distraction finish, but you can't call for the bell. Sasha Banks and Bayley leave. Asuka's there after the break, and Charlie interviews her, shows her all the thing, everything that happened last week. Because again, they're running short. They have nothing to put on the show. They can't possibly put Mustafa Ali's match on Raw. That has to go on main event. So they're running so short on time, they have to show like 5 minutes of shit that happened last week for the Sasha and Asuka thing, along with like 2 minutes of the Aleister Black Seth Rollins thing, along with like 4 minutes of lead up to the Apollo Crews versus, I get my meaning here, like there's at least 12 minutes of shit that they put in that doesn't need to fucking be there, and then they shunted Mustafa Ali off the main event. Am I bitter about that? Why would I be bitter about that? That's crazy. Just stop it. No, I'm not. No, not bitter. Anyway, Asuka, Asuka says that Kyrie is going to be fine, but she's not here right now. And she says, Asuka, I'm here, and I want a rematch from Banks and SummerSlam. And Shayna, like, is just there. She's just there. Like, she just popped up, like the same way Pat Buck just popped up. Maybe there's like a little trap door in the ring. And she says, "Hey, no, cool. I want to fight you. I'm cool. I'm here. I'm just to talk." So I don't want to fight you. In fact, I'm rooting for you. I hope you beat Sasha Banks. I'm going to be cheering and rooting for you the whole way through. And when you win, I'm going to be so happy, because then I'm going to dismember you and take that title from you. And this is all I've ever wanted from Shayna Baszler on the main roster. Can we just get this? She walks up to Sasha Banks, who she doesn't like because she thinks Sasha snaked her way into a title shot that she then won. So she just pops Sasha in the mouth. I disrespect you. Pop. Then she says, she's winning on points, let's say, versus Sasha, the champion, when Asuka interrupts and somehow gets the match thrown out because she attacks somebody who's not in the match. Then she says to Asuka, I want you to have the title when I take it from you. I wish there was a little bit more. You know what? I mean, like, I understand the subtext. I want the text. I held the NXT title for I don't know how many days she held it. She had that one small point in there where Kyrie took it from her for like, you know, a month and a half. But I held that NXT title for however many days. And the whole time I was down there, the one name that kept getting brought up to me about how I was good, but I'll never be, and I'm really great, but I'm not as good as, was you. You, Asuka. Not Bailey, not Sasha, not Becky, not Charlotte, you. I was never going to be as good, as big, as dominant in NXT as you. I had a lot to prove, because while I was very good, I was not as good as you. And that's bullshit. And I'm going to prove it when I take the title off of you. I just, want a little bit more to take us over the top and really get that connection. Maybe that's just me, but I always like a little extra sauce in my storylines. Fun fact, I like a little extra sauce with everything. It's probably why I'm the size that I am. So, Sasha comes out and interrupts this. This Asuka versus Shayna parlay. Sasha comes out with Bayley and she laughs oddly. This was all, you can tell, filmed way out of sequence. Like they were like, oh crap, we got to figure out what we're going to do about this. Hey, everybody come back and shoot this shit again. And it was really disjointed and felt weird. Sasha's over the top villain laugh is like just this side of cartoon. Like it's just at that point, like a little further, and it is not great anymore, but it was great. I'm the champion. This is mine. It's all mine. You can't have it. Asuka, I will give you a rematch at SummerSlam if you can beat Bayley next week. Bayley doesn't seem to be very happy with that. Backstage, Angel Garza, who is married, who got engaged on NXT. I'm never going to stop bringing this up. If you think I am, I'm never going to. He got engaged on NXT on USA Network programming. In the ring, got engaged. They made sure and showed it to us. They could have left it out, but they made sure to show it to us. Now he just got in. He got married to that same woman he got engaged to. And last night, he was hitting on some blonde chick from The Bachelor, I guess. If she hadn't said, I'm from The Bachelor, obviously, I would have not known who she was. I don't watch The Bachelor. I'm sure that's shocked everyone. I don't watch The Bachelor. Anyway, he's hitting on her, and then Charlie tweeted about, hey, watch your back, Bachelor girl. Charlie, he's fucking married. So here's what I want. At SummerSlam, an Angel Garza on a pole match. Bachelor girl versus Charlie Caruso versus Angel Garza's real life actual wife. Winner gets to keep Angel Garza, and the rest of them have to go away ever, forever. Forever. Just forever. I'm so sick of this shit. This is not... It's just so bad. Zelina Vega is very upset that Bachelor Girl is there. And she's going to give Angel Garza an earful about it. Hey, they got two singles matches versus the Street Profits set up. So we'll see those later. But I thought we were getting Raw Underground at 10 p.m. I thought it was implied to me at the time we were going to get Raw Underground from 10 to 11. Like the entire third hour of Raw was just going to be Raw Underground. That's what I thought we were getting. As it turns out, we go... we go backstage to Shane, who says, hey, coming back from commercial, you're not going to want to watch, you're not going to want to miss it. Remember, 10 p.m., it's going to be Raw Underground. There's more nondescript men fighting MMA style in a ring and fights being called immediately. And Shane's like the weird, twisted Lucifer MC of this hell. Liberate tuteme, ex infernis. And that's where we see the dancing girls for the first time. The dancing girls. They blow a kiss to Shane, who's married and has a bunch of kids. I don't know why. I don't know why this bothers me. It bothers me they haven't fucking dancing girls. It's goddamn 2020. Like, we had a whole thing recently about sexism. Not just sexism, but like fucking sexual assault and shit. In wrestling. Perhaps sexy dancing girls ain't the best way to push yourself through into the next generation of shit. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe just me. Not sure. So anyway, make sure you're here at 10 p.m. and not a moment after. Raw comes back from the break at like 9:56 and we get 3 minutes of Raw Underground and it's over by 10. Again, chef's kiss on WWE being WWE. Show up here at this time to watch this thing. You showed up now? Well, sorry, it's over. We started it early. So Shane says there's a place where there are no rules or very little rules. Which is it? There can't be no rules or very little is a different thing. Lots of carnage and chaos, lots of things that I like to see. So he's like, hey, who's the first guy who's gonna get Dabakato? Dabakato, who's Babatunde, who's been with NXT since 2016. He's a very large dude, 7 feet tall, 360 pounds, very large guy. And he beats up some small guy. And then it's presented as a shoot fight, you know, like guys like unloading with big punches and beating people down and double leg takedowns and like sleeper holds and shit. And the thing about when you present on a wrestling show, a professional wrestling show, you say, this is shoot fighting. This is real fighting. Well, it calls attention to all the other shit you put on your show that you don't say that about. So it makes us go, well, I mean, inside, really, I know that the stuff you put on stage isn't real fighting. I know that. Like, in my heart, I know it. But when you say, this over here, this is real fighting, unlike that shit over there, on your own show. Like, you can do that if your entire show is the underground stuff, is the fight clubby shit. If your entire show is that and you don't have any of the other stuff, fine. But when you can't play both worlds, you can't be like, this is real fighting. Anyway, back to you, Tom, with the implicit fake fighting. It's just fucking ridiculous. Anyway, Dabakato beats people up. And then they throw it back to Tom, and the because it's WWE, nobody's allowed to have any kind of actual opinions or say what they actually feel. So everyone's like, "Wow, I really think that Shane is onto something. What a great idea this is going to be!" And Samoa Joe's like, "I think this is great. A-OK from Samoa Joe." Fuck! It was awful. It doesn't make any fucking sense. If that is its own thing elsewhere, fine. If you want to have like on the network, whatever it is, WWE Underground, where you just do that for a half hour once a week, fine. It's its own thing. I'll let it be. But when you have it here, contrasting it with Raw, it doesn't make any sense. So, Angel Garza versus Angelo Dawkins is the first singles match. They start out with Angelo Dawkins, who it was mentioned on the broadcast last week, took some time off to be with his wife, or girlfriend, I'm not really sure, to be there for the birth of his son. Angelo Dawkins did. They said it last week that he was gone because he was attending to the birth of his son. And this week he's on the mic, like basically trying to get all up in the bachelor girl. Like you don't want to be with Angel Garza. You want to be with a real man. A real man with a newborn son? Again, WWE, just figure it out. Like, are you going to promote these guys as family men? Like, as Angel Garza proposing to his girlfriend was a very sweet and heartfelt thing. We got to see it felt very real. It was very nice. It created an immediate connection between us, the fans, and Angel Garza, a guy at that point we really didn't know much about other than he had breakaway pants. That was it. The only trait we knew, breakaway pants, that was it. If you said, here we're going to play a word association game, you can come up with one thing. When you hear a name, you say one thing about him. And you ask 100 people who watch NXT at the time, Angel Garza, every single one of them is going to say breakaway pants. That was his entire character. And then you said, hey, here he is proposing to his girlfriend in a really sweet manner. Oh, that's nice. Nice connection. Let's call him up to the main roster a couple weeks later and make him this guy who's like just sticking his dick in anything that walks. Awesome. Great. You can't have it both ways. You can't have Angelo Dawkins be promoted as this family man who's there taking time off to go be there for the birth of his son. And then next week we're like, hey, bachelor girl, let's get it on. The fuck? Seriously, the fuck? Pick one. Pick one and go with it. If you didn't mention Angelo Dawkins' kid on the air, I'd let it slide. But you did, and now you fucked up. So, Montez Ford cut a promo before this whole thing. He gets very serious, very angry. He's a fucking star in the making. He's going to be he should be one of the biggest stars of the next 10 years. One of the top 5 stars in WWE of the next 10 years. And if he's not, there's something wrong with this company. Just something wrong with this company. So anyway, the match is fine. At some point, Montez Ford, who's been hanging out at ringside, he just falls down, just collapses in a heap out of nowhere. Nobody touched him, nothing. So Dawkins is like, he leans through the ropes and he's like, hey, are you okay? What's going on? And so Angel Garza like takes advantage of the distraction, kicks him in the head and wins. So after the bell, Dawkins goes to check on Ford, who seems he's a little dazed and confused. He collapsed, you understand, like in a heap, just collapsed out of nowhere, which is weird, right? Especially during, a deadly global pandemic. Maybe we should stop everything, get this man tested, as well as everybody else he's come in contact with, probably. However, back from the break, and he's having a match. He's having a match! This company's so fucking tone deaf. They decided to do a guy collapses at ringside when everybody knows we've had an outbreak here. Collapses at ringside. We don't know what's wrong with him. Doctors checked on him, quote unquote, but he seems fine. Let's have a match. They decided to make that a storyline. During COVID-19. Just saying. Ford and Andrade have a fine match, whatever. At one point, Ford tries to do he does a big comeback thing. Like he does this thing where he like does the old Ultimate Warrior thing where he shakes the ropes, but he collapses. He just falls down. And the referee calls for the match. There's no contest. They call it for a doctor. It's really serious. They're playing it as really serious. If this was live, you could be forgiven for thinking, holy shit, I hope he's okay. What the hell's going on? And then being like, oh my God, I hope he's okay. I hope he's okay and hasn't infected anybody. You could be forgiven for thinking those things if this was live, but because we know it's taped and we know if that was actually the case, they would have fucking stopped shit. So we got to see it. So it's not actually that. So we know that it's something they wrote into the storyline, which makes it even oogier. Anyway, Murphy's backstage and he's watching him take Aleister Black's eye on his phone. And Seth Rollins being like, hey, you made the right decision. Good for you. Proud of you. Are you going to accept Dominic Mysterio's challenge to SummerSlam? Why would he do that? Well, he's never had a match before. He's just sacrificing himself for pride for his old man. And Rollins just walks off. Back to Raw Underground. And we get to see Eric from the Viking Raiders looking better than he's looked in a long time, actually, because they actually just let him fight and be fucking, you know, they let him be fucking Ro from War Machine for a change. He beats the hell out of him. Whatever guy he's facing, some random dude. Shane goes, oh, that was sick, because Shane is, you know, he's like a 22-year-old skateboarder. That's who Shane McMahon is. Shane calls the fight, and hey, who's going to be next? I guess we'll come back to this later. So they keep saying, wow, what a great thing this is, this Raw Underground. How great it is, this Raw Underground. My God. So they're interviewing Angel Garza and Andrade and Zelina Vega about what happened to Montez Ford. And they're like, Angel Garza is flirting with Charlie. They act like they're very concerned about Montez Ford. Angelo Dawkins comes out. He's a wreck. He's distraught. She says the trainers look like he thinks he might have been poisoned. So there's somebody slipped him something in his drink, in his solo cup. Somebody put something in there. From the old man who brought you, somebody saying, cut the mustard in their promo last night, comes the riveting storyline, who slipped Montez a Mickey? Perfect. Chef's kiss. Bianca Belair, this is where the whole thing turns and becomes good, because anything Bianca Belair touches becomes good. She comes out and she says, she's immediately pissed at, like, Dawkins is like upset for his friend. Bianca Belair is going to cut a bitch. Like, she comes out and she's immediately up in Zena's face. I know one of y'all three poisoned my man. This is so great, because as Zelina Vega is trying to explain why she could never do something like that, Bianca Belair, in silence, is removing her earrings, one after another, flinging them off to the side, and just goes after Zelina. Like, the image of Zelina just trying to talk out her ass about lying about all this stuff, and Bianca Belair just, like, fuming inside as she takes off one earring, and then another, and then flings them silently, wordlessly. She's a fucking star. She and Montez, married together, is a can't-miss superstar, megastar, ultra-star act. Get off your ass and make them into those stars right fucking now. Do not waste anybody's time with who slipped Montez a Mickey storylines. Just push him to the moon. Got it? Thanks. So, here's the deal. Remember how I said they were going to debut a faction last night? They never did. Also, hey, remember Remember how the lights were flickering and the microphones were cutting out? I mean, we thought it was weather, but apparently, Tom Phillips says, there was some surveillance camera footage from earlier in the night. We see a bunch of people running up. They're all wearing black. Their hoods, they got masks on. They're running up to what appear to be a stack of amplifiers, but I guess it's supposed to be like an electricity transformer of some kind. They call it a generator. They don't. WWE, the Tom calls it a generator. They run up there, and one of them has a Molotov cocktail that he lights and throws at the generator. And it lights on fire. And they cheer, and then they run away. So a couple things. Vince's new heel faction is Antifa. And that's somehow even more tone deaf than trying to do a heel Nation of Domination faction. All these guys dressed in black, you know, whatever. Apparently, they want to see the world burn. They're a bunch of anarchists. They want to see the world burn, except they only brought enough gasoline for one Molotov cocktail. Womp womp. Is that how generators work? Like, if you light one on fire, does the building the generator is connected to, does the lights flicker a little bit and the microphones cut out, but nothing else happen? If you light the generator on fire, I'm saying, is that what happens? Does electrical fires in the generator cause minor power outages that are quickly restored? Because I would think it would lead to much more chaos than that. Bigger problems. Also, I would assume any of these members of Antifa or Anti-Raw have watched a movie, have watched any movie where somebody cuts the power to a building. If your aim is to cut the power to a building, wouldn't you just cut the power literally with, like, fucking, I don't know, snip some wires or some shit? You brought one bottle and enough gas. Did you siphon the gasoline out of your mother's minivan? This is the shit I'm talking about. They do not know what they are doing. All we know is that today, Tuesday, there was a report out of WWE.com that we have learned the name of this faction is Retribution. The name of the faction is Retribution. They did not say how they came into that information, and they do not know anything else about the faction. So did somebody in the faction, did they leave a post-it note? We are called Retribution. And they got this post-it note, see? They take this post-it note and they, like, leave it on the burnt out husk of the generator that they firebombed with one Molotov cocktail. Is that how you figured it out? Who gave you the information? How did you come by it? Anonymous sources? Is that what it was? Is that what it fucking was? I don't like this. We'll see where this goes, but it can only be bad. It can only be bad. There can be no good things to come from it. If they debut Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, and Roderick Strong, and I don't know, Dijak, as a bunch of Antifa guys, I'm going to strangle myself with piano wire live on this show. I mean, don't hold me to that. I'm not actually going to do that because, let's be honest, there's a very good chance they debut them as Antifa guys. So Charlie talks to the Hurt Business backstage, and they're all wearing suits, and they look fucking great. They should only wear suits. They should wrestle in suits. Like, what was his name? Mr. Hughes? Yeah, just wrestle in shirt sleeves and suspenders. Fucking great. There's some sabotage going on tonight. We should figure out what's going on. Maybe this is, you know what? This is weird. Maybe this is some sabotage has to do with this Raw Underground thing showing up. So let's go talk to the Raw Underground people, says MVP and the Hurt Business. So they go. So we get the thing with the, again, let's look at some video of what happened with Seth Rollins and the Mysterio family. Let's look at the entire history of that, all of it, because we don't possibly have time for Mustafa Ali, not for all this, not with all this shit we got to do. So Seth gets on the mic before he wants to talk about Dominic's challenge to SummerSlam. He wants to be angry at Tom Phillips. And he's upset because last week when Dominic was hitting him with a kendo stick, that Tom Phillips, who's supposed to be objective, was cheering for Dominic through the whole thing. And so now he's going to yell at him. It's like, if you're the voice of Raw, you're supposed to be objective. People look to you to be right down the middle. And I don't know, like what, as a journalist, you have a responsibility. I don't know Tom Phillips ever claimed to be a journalist. Like, he sends Instagram messages that wanted to fuck chicks' faces. Like, he's not fucking Walter Cronkite. You know, he's a douchebag who got one dude fired and another guy shipped off to England. He's a fucking douche. Like, I don't think Tom Phillips has ever been objective about anything in his life. What? Anyway, he says that he's going to sacrifice Tom Phillips. And at that point, I was thinking to myself, listen, if Seth Rollins takes Tom Phillips' eye, then I'll forgive everything. That didn't happen, though. It's too bad. He says, Murphy, take him. And so Murphy starts to walk over to him. And Samoa Joe, who's sitting there between Tom Phillips and Murphy, says, like, nope, that's not happening. That's not happening. He says, oh my God, you go, this is not happening. I'm standing in your way. I'm not going to let this happen. He says, Rollins, you go back in the ring. Now you say what you've got to say. You don't do that. I'm going to slap you in the lips. I'm going to slap you in the lips. I've never heard anybody say that. That's the only thing, not slap you in the face, not smack you in the face. Slap you in the lips is the only thing I'll tolerate from now on. It's perfect. They stare each other down. I'm going to beat the hell out of this guy, Buddy Murphy. Samoa Joe just putting bass in his voice and getting up in somebody's face. God damn, that's the best Samoa Joe, man. I love him. I miss him in the ring. I think he's so fucking great. God, he's so good on the mic. I'm going to slap you in the lips. I'm going to beat the hell out of this guy. Like, God damn it, that was great. He says, you want to do this? You don't want to do this. You don't want to do this, Joe. Come on, Joe. You don't want to do this. And Joe's like, yeah, I do. Takes off his headset. So we'll go to commercial. And we're going to have, apparently, a match between Samoa Joe and Buddy Murphy or Seth Rollins. And no, we're not. Seth Rollins, like, Samoa Joe took the entire commercial break to take off his jacket and roll up his sleeves. And Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy are hanging out in the ring, like, holding chairs. Like, that's not going to be a real match. So Dominic shows up and beats the hell out of them with a kendo stick again. Hits a 619 on Rollins, which is a giant big splash to the floor on both of them. Like, Dominic looks great. Good for him. Good for him. I'm so happy that he can follow in his footsteps if that's what he wants. I have no idea if he can actually hold his own during an actual match, but the spots they picked out for him, he looked great in them. Good for him. Let's see. So Rollins says, yes, I will accept your match. And I'm going to fight you at SummerSlam, and I will sacrifice you as well. So we're in Raw Underground again. The Hurt Business arrives and decides that, hey, until further notice, Raw Underground is being controlled by the Hurt Business. Now, at this point, I was like, oh, did Shane come here to introduce this? And now it becomes like MVP is running Def Jam Vendetta in the basement of Vince's house. Like, that's what it feels like. I'm cool. The Def Jam video games were great. Let's do that. Okay, fine, I suppose. Can we get rid of the dancing girls? Because that's meh. But, like, who wants to fight Lashley first? And some random dude says, I'll do it. I volunteer to be broken in half. So Lashley beats, dominated, and slammed, and just destroyed, and knocked out, whatever. They beat everybody. Like, now, do you remember a guy who used to be one on the Raw color team back in the fall? Dio Madden was his name. Big black dude, long dreadlocks. We haven't seen him since he did something very notable. Paul Heyman was getting up in the face of Jerry Lawler and yelling at him about how he almost died and that could be arranged again because Brock Lesnar's there. And Dio Madden got up in Paul Heyman's face and said, no, you're not going to talk to him like that. I don't know why Dio Madden cares about Jerry Lawler, but okay. Just like, you know, on principle, I suppose. And then Brock Lesnar picks up Dio Madden and F5s him through the table. That's during the build of Survivor Series. We have not seen Dio Madden since. Apparently he got sent back to NXT to be a wrestler because that's what he was doing before he started dabbling in announcing, but we haven't seen him since. We have no idea where he's been. Apparently, he's been locked in this back room wearing plaid pants since then because he steps up and wants to fight Shelton Benjamin and he gets his ass whooped. So it's a good thing that they sent him back down to NXT for all that seasoning. Anyway, MVP beats up dudes. Shelton Benjamin beats up dudes. They just knocked him all over the place. Isaiah Swerve Scott, who again is being positioned in NXT as the top contender for the Cruiserweight Championship. He's just there to be a black guy watching. That's what it looks like to me. They don't mention him by name. Just being a black guy watching this stuff happening. That's all he is. And he gets his ass kicked toot sweet on the outside. And the Hurt Business stands tall in the middle of the ring saying, he says. Shane gets on the mic and says, wow, that was insane, guys. Whew, man. Let's show the replay of them beating everybody up. What an amazing debut of Raw Underground tonight. Hey, the Hurt Business, you're welcome back anytime. And I was like, no, they just said until further notice they're in charge. So Shane, get the fuck out and let these guys run things. I'd somehow be better, more okay with the Raw Underground thing if it was MVP and Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin running shit. He Shane says, I can't wait to see what Raw Underground does next week. Well, that makes one of us, Shane. I think this is now officially the longest episode of Sour Graps in history. Now 1 hour and 35 minutes. God bless all of you for sticking through it. You know why? You know why I was able to talk for so long? Because I got that sour power from the official drink of Sour Graps Lemonade. I got that sour power. This has been Sour Graps. I have been your host, Alex Pulaski. Fight Club. Somebody showed Vince Fight Club, a 21-year-old movie, and he was like, let's do that. I mean, I don't know that that's what happened for sure, but there's like a 7% chance that it did. And that's all you got to know. Everything sucks.